Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased here once again to have with us Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here, and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. So, if you got problems, if you got questions, you still got some problem you haven't solved, you're starting to think about what you're going to do next year even, or you're maybe thinking about things that you can plant this fall, and there are still things that you can put in the ground at a time like this. So any and all of that is certainly fine. All you have to do is pick up the telephone and give us a call. 333-9455 is the number for Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you.
There we go.
What?
Your microphone
wasn't turned
on. Oh, what's
it on?
A small, small problem there being turned out. Glad to have you here once again. We got a couple of people here already lined up and ready to go. Maybe I'll just ask you real quick. Starting grass. Can we do that now? Is this the time?
Yes. As far as if you want to reseed a lawn or start a new lawn, this is actually the best time to do it because you have a lot less weed seed pressure than you have in the spring if you're trying to do a whole new lawn. So this is actually an excellent time to do that.
Okay. And just the usual things, you do want to make sure that it's well watered for the germination?
Yeah, certainly if you're starting the grass from seed, really with any seed, is just making sure that it's well watered. And that's going to mean, you know, fairly constant sprinkling. You don't have to do really deep irrigation until it finally comes up, but just constant sprinkling just to keep that top surface moist. And then once it germinates then and starts to grow a little bit, then you can, you know, hold off and just do more thorough watering, but not quite as often. So that's always the biggest problem, just keeping it moist.
All right. Well, we have several callers here. In fact, the lines are full. So we'll get at it. We'll start with someone in Urbana. Line one. Hello.
Good morning. This is a follow-up to a comment or question I made on some previous season's show. I mentioned that I was trying out a new kind of grass seed. It comes in a plastic bag as opposed to bulk, and it's labeled as a water saver. Well, I had killed part of on purpose, and then another part not on purpose because I used the wrong herbicide. I forgot what I had in a bulk. Anyway, in the tree, what we call the tree lawn, that's what my husband calls it from where he grew up, the part between the sidewalk and the street. So I had these two sections, which I've reseeded at different times, but with this same kind of seed. So in the one area where I did it by mistake, I killed a lot of the stuff, and so there's a lot of this new seed. In another area, it's patchy. Well, I'd kind of forgotten about the lawn during this past dry period that we had up until a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were having an event, so I thought I'd better go out and look and see whether I needed to water the lawn. And it was quite obvious where the new seed was.
Mm-hmm.
So some of it I had planted, we planted this spring, but others I had planted a year ago or more. I forget when I did it. And although I had not watered it, when I went out to look, you could see that the grass was green where I had this new seed, and it had a lot of brown in it where I did not have the new seed.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to share that because it seems as though with our increasing population, we're putting more and more pressure on our water supply, and that if we can manage to cut back on our lawn watering, that's one thing that reduces that need. It also reduces, I presume, you know, stuff getting in the water supply, and it saves time and money. I just wanted to report the results of my experiment.
So what is it? What variety is it?
Well, it says it has a turf-type tall fescue lawn seed, and in the back it says, what does it say? They're patented. 34% Labyrinth RTF tall fescue. It also calls itself self-repairing, apparently. It tillers a lot underground, sends side shoots out.
Yeah, well, and people can get turf-type tall fescue. That is one of the newer ones that, maybe I shouldn't say newer ones, but it's certainly ones that have been looked at more and more for low-maintenance landscapes, you know, ones that don't require as much fertilization as well as watering, those kind of things. So, and it's certainly something to look at. So if people want to look at that, not always assume that you have to go with Kentucky bluegrass. The look is different. I mean, the look is different. People just have to realize that there is a little bit different look. It's going to be a little bit different color, but it's still can be quite a quality lawn. And it's not the old tall fescue that we think of that's in pastures. It's truly a turf type. It has a smaller leaf blade and looks more aesthetically pleasing than what we might typically think of a tall fescue.
Yeah, the blade is coarser than some other grasses in other parts where the city had redone the street and had put in grass seed, and it's finer bladed stuff. This was not quite a number of years ago, like 13 years ago. Mm-hmm. So what has survived of that is finer bladed. That's the 34%. There's some other fescues. There's a Southern Comfort tall fescue in this mix, an Avalon tall fescue, and those make up 90-some-odd percent, close to 100%. The other things are small amounts. Anyway, so I just wanted to report on that because it seems to... I thought that was a pretty good test. I could definitely see the difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good lesson as people were thinking about reseeding their lawn and maybe think about something a little different rather than always going with Kentucky bluegrass.
And this is a mixture that's all tall fescue, but it has different cultivars of tall fescue.
Right. Exactly.
Is that a good thing if you're looking for a grass mix to have, even if it's all basically the same kind of grass, you want to have different varieties of that same thing.
Absolutely. And that's always a good suggestion with any of this stuff, whether it's Kentucky bluegrass or whatever it is that if you can get more varieties or cultivars in there, then if there is an insect problem or disease problem, whatever, then hopefully it doesn't wipe out the whole thing, that there's some resistance built in there one way or the other. And sometimes some of them are more shade tolerant than others. So there's some really good reasons why, you know, those will be listed. But generally, those are going to be more expensive. So to realize that when you start getting into those mixes and blends where there may be more than one species in there, or more than one cultivar in there, you're probably going to spend a little bit more money than that. But in the long run, you're better off. So,
all right. Let's talk with another Urbana person here. Line two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a black walnut tree. Last year, it didn't bloom, or anyway, I didn't get any walnuts. And this year, the squirrels are just destroying my yard and the tree. And is there anything I can do to make it not have walnuts?
I couldn't quite figure out which way you were going with this.
Did you want them?
Messy and awful. And they're tearing up my trees and pulling off the leaves as they go.
So the squirrels are happy and you're not, so I don't blame you. You know, there are some newer things now that are out there that there's actually a newer product, but I'm not sure if it's labeled for walnuts or not. It's labeled for things like ginkgo and a few other plants that sometimes we don't want them to flower and fruit. And it's called Snipper, but you'd have to check with a local arborist to see if they have that and also to see if that's on the label. I know it has a wide label for a wide variety of plants, and that actually would be something that'd have to be done every year. It has to be done in the spring. So there are some requirements there where it has to be done, but it's pretty good from what we've seen on some of the other plants. It's pretty good at keeping things from flowering, fruiting. It's actually an injection that they do.
And is this something I can do to the tree?
No, you really have to hire somebody to do it because timing is crucial on it, and also when it's actually applied, as well as how it's applied, because you can't go too deep within the bark, those kind of things. So you really need somebody who knows what they're doing.
Would you think somebody, if I look in the Yellow Pages, I might find somebody to call, or the city would do it for me?
Probably not the city. I would check with the certified arborist is what you want to look for.
Okay.
And the product is called Snipper, is probably one of the newer ones. There's Florel is one that's been around for a while, but that's a spray. And they just need to check and make sure that walnuts would be on the label. I'm not sure on that, but I know it does have a wide variety of plants listed on it.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. Let us continue here. We'll go next to someone who is listening in Lafayette, line number four. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. What is it and what can be done about grass, mostly bluegrass, but some fescue, that just lies down So I mow over it and can't get it cut.
Okay. So it's not that it's getting too tall?
No.
So it's not getting too tall?
It gets too tall when it lies down, and then I can't mow it, but I didn't let it go, no.
Okay, so it's not that it didn't get too tall. Unless it's some of the fine leaf fescues really have a tendency, you know, because they're so fine leafed, sometimes those have a tendency to sort of lay down. So it's not that the grass is dying or anything like that or doesn't seem to have any disease problems. It's truly just laying down.
But can I do any? I try to go around first raking to get it upright long enough to mow, and it still doesn't work.
Right. And have you've tried different directions?
Yeah.
Actually mowing it at different directions. And
it'll flop over which direction, any direction the rake comes.
And then when you're mowing it, is it because it's really dry? That would be the other thing I'd wonder about.
No.
So it's not that it's really dry and you fertilize periodically or that kind of thing. Beyond that, I'm not sure what else is going on unless there's some sort of a disease issue there that's making it mat, because we do have a few fungal diseases that will make grass mat. Beyond that, I'm not sure what else is going on. It could be something that you could check with your local extension office and maybe bring in a sample or something and go a little farther than that. But you may just decide that maybe this time of year you might want to go ahead and do some overseeding and try to get some different seed in there. Is this a fairly shady lawn or a sunny lawn? Or
Some sun, some shade. Mm-hmm. The falling over doesn't seem to favor
one or the other. Okay. I think what I would do is that this would be a great time of year to be thinking about overseeding and getting some different grass in there to see if maybe that might be the issue. Maybe this is the type of grass that you have in there.
It would be hard to do because it's so thick.
Well, you can do that with you can rent these things called slit seeders, you know, where you could certainly do that. So I'm not sure if it's not getting too long, you may want to try actually mowing it. I don't know what height you mow at, but certainly you could, at this time of year, normally you could certainly go to 2 inches and maybe just a little bit shorter than that.
I mostly have mowed at 3 inches.
Yeah.
And the grass flopped over is now a good 6 inches.
Okay. So it sounds like maybe mowing it a little shorter, like at 2 inches, would be good.
Mm-hmm. If I could,
but you're going to have to.
If I could make
rake
it stand it up long enough to do it, yeah.
Right. Maybe, unfortunately, maybe you have to get out there and rake it and then mow it at a shorter height.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right,
good luck.
Thanks for the call. Just for the information of the previous caller, I am now looking here at what I think are the label for snipper. Mm-hmm. It is a woody plant deflowering hormone, and it has all the information here for that you would need to know if you were the applicator, all that kind of stuff. But what I want to mention is that it does list it for black walnut.
Oh, good.
And for a number of different things. So that sounds like that should work. But again, as you said, it's not the kind of thing that an individual homeowner can do for himself or herself. You got to hire a professional arborist to do it. All right. Well, our guest this morning here on this part of Focus 580 is Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month on a Tuesday, she's here and we talk about lawn and garden care. Questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. The next caller's in Hoopston on line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yes, I have a little bed that's... the bulb type lilies, and it quits flowering about 1st of August. And I wonder when is the best time to dig that up and separate the bulbs.
Actually,
the foliage is real green yet.
You could certainly do that now, or even a little bit later toward the end of September would be just fine. If you want to do that. Actually, you can even do it in the springtime as well. But if you do it now, then you're probably not going to interrupt the flowering cycle at all.
Okay.
But you could certainly do that.
And then you just replant the bulbs?
Yep. And you'll find there's a whole bunch of little bitty ones down there, too, which you can certainly plant out, too.
Okay. Well, I didn't know what the best time to do that was.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Next, we'll talk with someone in Urbana. This is line 1. Hello.
Good morning. I now have the poison ivy cleared out of the way, and I'm ready to plant my little crab apple tree. So what I would like is, if you would just kind of cover general fall tree planting suggestions and especially talk about watering.
Okay, kind of on how to kind of care kind of things?
Yeah.
Is
I mean,
to me?
What is different in the fall than the spring? Because obviously we can't keep watering once it's frozen. So is there anything special to do that I wouldn't do if I were planting it in the spring, if I'd gotten on the ball?
Mm-hmm. No, and actually fall is a fine time to plant, so don't beat yourself up over that. Fall time is just a fine time to plant. And actually September is a good time to plant, because usually we have really good temperatures and hopefully get into more moisture. So that's fine. I think number one, anytime you're planting, whether it's spring or fall, is with trees to make sure you don't plant them too deep.
Right.
We're seeing a lot of problems these days with trees getting planted too deep. So even on baby trees, you'll see the little trunk flare. It comes out like a little skirt.
Mm-hmm.
And you may find that it actually has been buried within the pot, or it's buried within the ball and burlap.
Right.
So sometimes you have to dig down to find that little flare. So you always want to make sure the flare is above the surface.
Right.
So replant. Also, when you plant, we also want to make sure that when you dig the hole, it's good to go check where that flare is and then measure how deep you need to plant the, need to dig the hole, because that's how deep you want it. You don't want it extra deep, in other words, because otherwise it's just going to sink. So it actually, it's good. Yeah, it's good for us. We don't have to dig as deep a hole. So you want kind of a wide hole instead of a really deep hole. That's probably the big thing. So it almost looks more like a dish rather than a big hole.
Uh-huh.
So that would be the other thing. Also, as far as you really don't have to do much in the way of adding compost and all those things, there's a lot of debate these days, but pretty much the theory is to stick with the virgin soil. Whatever soil you have there is pretty much just to use that. You don't need to fertilize.
Right.
The thought is anymore that to wait until the trees are like 2 or 3 years old before we think about fertilizing. Certainly watering is going to be a big issue. And if, I don't know whether these are balled and burlapped or from a container. I don't know
no,
how
it's
you're getting
not a
these.
Container. It's okay. Been languishing in, I think, in a nice sawdust mulch.
Okay. So probably the big thing is, if it is bald and burlapped, certainly watering on a regular basis. And your best bet is really just to pay attention, obviously, to how windy and how warm it is, but also just to periodically check the soil. Just really find out how wet the soil is, because depending on whether it's in a lot of clay or whatever. And so your best bet is just to sort of find those things out. And they have these tree gaiters now. I don't know if you know those.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
The big green plastic bags that stick around the trees. They don't look all that great, but I think they're great in the sense that you notice them and you'll say, oh, look at that big ugly thing. Oh, I better water the tree.
Right.
So it reminds you to water the tree by seeing that thing out there. Plus the fact it's a good way to water, because you fill it up and then it just gently sort of goes into the soil. And so it really makes a nice way to water trees. So I think those things are great. Mulching is also good. You know, 2 or 3 inches of mulch. Don't put it right next to the trunk. Those kind of things are good. So just, I guess those are probably some of the bigger things that I can think of. Did you have another specific question? Or
Mulch on under the gator?
Yeah, I'd go ahead and put like 2 or 3 inches of mulch. You just don't want to pack it right next to the trunk, none of that, you know, volcano-looking stuff that we see from time to time. So we don't want to see that. So that's good. Staking, you generally don't have to stake it unless it's really a huge tree in a very windy area. So no staking.
Yeah, but she's pretty short.
Yeah, so that part's good. And then if it does happen to be, if someone did have a containerized tree, you have to water actually more often. You may find you have to water every single day on a containerized tree just because of the bark mulch that it's been in. Because of those containerized soils.
Yeah, it has more fine roots, I suppose.
Yep, it has. And so it's just very different. So on containerized trees, you may find you have to water more often. But generally every few days, but it may be more often depending on how windy it is and how warm it is. So.
Do you know if the gators are available in town?
I think so. I've seen them around town. I think even some of the box stores, I've seen them around.
Oh, I know.
So I think you can, just check around, but certainly garden centers should have them.
All right, and then how late in the season? I mean, after the first frost, can we stop watering?
Pretty much as long as it's got leaves, obviously, you want to keep watering. But I even water, even if they don't have leaves, and if it's really dry for some reason, I still go ahead and water them periodically, maybe only once every couple weeks.
Right.
But as long as the ground isn't frozen, I still sort of give them a little water in that very beginning stage.
Okay, that sounds good. That's perfect.
Okay. Good luck.
If you win it, boom, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
We will talk next with someone in Ashmore. This is line number 2. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Number 1, when do you cut back your peony plants?
As soon as they die back naturally.
Okay.
Although mine are looking pretty sad right now between the drought and disease and everything else, so I pretty well already cut mine back. But as long as they're still green, you leave them on there.
Okay, leave them on until they're mm-hmm. green. Okay, the other thing is we have a Bradford pear tree. And part of the branches die, and then the leaves fall off.
Mm-hmm.
My husband had put a fungicide on there earlier in the year, and that helped a little, but it's still continuing.
So the branches die back completely?
Yeah.
Or branches, just the leaves just kind of die and then fall?
Well, the leaves die, yeah. The branches are you know, pretty weak.
Okay. I guess a couple things. Bradford pears, they don't get a whole lot of insect and disease problems, but we do see some, and actually there's been some reports that maybe they even get fire blight, which is a bacterial disease. But that usually causes kind of a bending of the stems.
Uh-huh.
But we don't see that very often, usually in the ornamental pears. So that would be one thing to kind of look at. But the other thing I would wonder about is that, did it suffer some damage from the ice storm or anything like that? We have a tendency, the Bradford pears tend to sort of break off, especially in during ice storms or anytime there's any kind of weight like that.
They're not a very sturdy tree, I realize. But
that hasn't seemed to be the issue. The other thing that I will confess to, that I had a Bradford pear. Actually, I wasn't too upset that it died because it had other issues. But we actually, and I just got through telling everybody, this goes to show you that I don't always know what the heck I'm doing either. And I learned the hard way, too. Way back when, I didn't realize that trees often were bald and burlapped, and they were actually buried too deep. You know, the trunk flare was not there. So when I planted this tree, I did not get the trunk flare out there at the top. And so it actually rotted at the right where the ground and the trunk meat.
Okay.
And it finally just completely rotted away and then fell over. So I would check, just so you know, I would check and make sure you don't have something a little bit more severe going on there, and just check. You can just check the stem itself or the trunk itself and just sort of feel around there, because once I started investigating, I found out really quickly it was rotting along there.
Okay.
So you may find that there's more issues along those lines that are going on. Not necessarily to say that that's what yours is, but just to realize that sometimes it's something beyond the stems.
Yeah, the other branches in the tree, you know, seem to be fine. It's just, you know, one or two branches in the tree.
I think what you might find, although the plant clinic's going to be closing this week, is you may find you want to make sure that it's really a fungus that's going on. So when it starts to happen, maybe to take in a sample to the local extension office, or send it to the U of I plant clinic or something. Really find out what's going on those leaves when it's sort of first happening.
Right, okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And we'll go to another call. This is line 3, and the person is in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Hey, the last couple of weeks when I've gotten out in the yard, I have broke out in a poison ivy type of rash,
mm-hmm.
pretty severe.
Mm-hmm.
Only I'm pretty sure I don't have any poison ivy in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
So I know there are some other plants that can cause this sort of thing.
Yep.
And I know I pulled some nettle up. I do have gypsum weed. But can you think of anything that would cause
that
sort of reaction?
I sure can, because I've been there, done that.
It's not fun.
Let me tell you all the many ways that I've broken out into a poison ivy rash. Anything, at least, and this isn't everybody, but anything that's in the euphorbia family, if you have any of the spurges that have that white milky sap, some people are quite allergic to it. That would be one thing. Also, things like poison parsnips in kind of that celery family, believe it or not. A lot of times people are allergic to that, and you get that same kind of a poison ivy-looking thing going on. So if you might have those. And also, what was the other? The herb rue. Do you know that? R-U-E?
Yeah.
I
don't have any, I don't think. But
people are also allergic to it. So
okay.
Those are the ones I can think of right offhand that cause that same kind of reaction.
Would a nettle cause that?
Nettle or certainly cause that, but, well, I guess it depends on how sensitive you are to it. But nettle is usually more of a sort of a prickly kind of a feeling, as opposed to that long-term rash that you think of with poison ivy. But everybody obviously can react differently. I think probably...
I moved some cup plants. Well, I cut cup plants back.
I wouldn't think cup plants would do it. Yeah, I wouldn't think cup plants would do it. But cup plants, you know, are kind of prickly themselves. You know, they're pretty rough.
I moved a caria. I cut back a green dogwood, sunflowers. None of those would really...
I can't think of any of those that might... You know, and obviously everybody's a little different. You can always have some rash issues. But I guess the biggest thing, obviously some of it is just covering yourself. But the other thing with a lot of these is that it causes a photosensitivity. And it's one of those things, if you weren't in the sun, you wouldn't see the reaction. So it causes this hypersensitivity to the sun. And so if you work around things, or if you can periodically go and wash really well, sometimes that helps to get that stuff off of your skin.
Okay.
If you're going to stay in the sun, or what I do is that if I know I'm going to be working around any of that stuff, I make sure that that's the last thing I do, and then I go in the house.
Yeah, I'm going to wash my gloves. I'm going to
wash
everything. I'm about half afraid to go back out there.
Yeah, and you know, poison ivy can pop up here, there, and everywhere as tiny little plants because the birds will move them around. So you may end up with poison ivy and not even realize it's out there would be the other thing, too. Yeah, good luck. It's sometimes
All
hard
right.
to figure it out.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So probably the best advice is that if you're going to be working out in the yard, wear some hand protection. And then if you can, of course, it's tough if it's going to be really hot, but you'd want to minimize the amount of bare skin that you've got there. So less chance of you getting something on there.
Yep. Long sleeves. And then again, just really washing well afterwards, you know, even periodically or something so that you don't have those oils on your skin especially these ones that cause these photosensitivity issues.
Isn't there some kind of product that you can put on a kind of a barrier if you know you're going to be out where there's poison ivy so the stuff doesn't get on your skin? And then I guess the thing is you would wash that off, and you'd have to be really careful how you did that.
Yeah, I think I've heard about the barrier parts. There's certainly some special soaps that say they're specially formulated for poison ivy and stuff. But again, probably any kind of good soap is probably a good thing to do. And the other thing that I've done is that I've tried to carry around those little handy wipe things, those alcohol handy wipe things. Uh-huh. And then if I think that, oh my gosh, I got into something, then I have it right there. And then you can get it off your skin, because the sooner you get it off your skin, the better.
Yeah.
So
pesky thing about poison ivy is that at different times of the year, it can look completely different, but it can still be, can still get you. So early in the spring, it looks one way, and in the fall, it looks one way, and in high summer, it looks a different way. And you could easily, if you think you know what poison ivy looks like, you could easily get in with it and not know it. So.
Yeah, and as it grows, it looks different. You know, it can go up as a tree. It looks almost like a shrub or like a small plant. And then the fact that the birds bring it in. So you often get it around fence rows or, you know, bird baths, even those kind of places where birds hang out. So sometimes it's kind of hard to figure out, you know, right where it is.
I'm sure that we've talked about, is there a particular kind of glove that you mentioned that you really like? And that also, the thing is, you know, I like the sort of standard leather work gloves. Problem is that they don't really like getting wet.
Right.
Are there some gloves that really are comfortable to wear and that you can wash?
Mm-hmm. And they actually have washable leather gloves now, believe it or not, that are, and they really don't do too bad. They get a little stiff, but, you know, they really don't do bad even after you wash them. So you certainly could use those. There's a lot of newer gloves that have actually, they're lighter weight. They're not the old type of kind of plastic gloves, but there are some lighter weight ones now. And I can't remember any brand names right offhand, but I think people would be amazed at the wide selection of gloves that are out there now. And then the fact that they have such smaller sizes than they ever used to. But there's some really nice summer type gloves that have kind of plastic on the tips and on the palm itself. And so you're much more protected, and those wash up beautifully. So it's a summer type glove, not quite as hot. Really some nice things out there. So
all right, you're
good,
going on to the
good gifts for birthdays.
For the gardener in your life. Okay, very good. Sandy Mason's with us. She's here every month, always on a Tuesday, and we talk about lawn and garden care. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And if you have questions, you can call us 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Mattoon, line 4.
Good morning. I wonder if you have an opinion on planting in raised rows. I'm planning on putting in some garlic in the next few weeks. This last year, I didn't have a very good crop. I don't know whether it was the rows or whether it was the dry weather or what, but normally I use raised rows for lettuce, spinach, green beans. Do you have an opinion on that? I have another question on a yard, too.
I always have an opinion. about anything. Give me something out there. I think it's great. And I will tell you that I've talked to a lot of folks that had trouble with garlic this year. So it probably wasn't anything that you did wrong. I think it was just because of the weird weather we had and that like cold spell and everything. So I've talked to a lot of people that had garlic issues. So they're probably, it was mainly environmental things. But I think the raised rows are great, especially, you know, for a number of reasons. You know, it's good, especially if you have poor drainage issues. It helps in the springtime, helps the soil to warm up better. So I think there's a lot of reasons why you might want to go with the raised rows. So I think that's great.
Well, that's, I'm glad to hear that.
Sure.
Regarding yards, should you cut your yard short near the end of the season, cut the grass short, or just normal, or let it get high?
Well, okay, we don't want it to get too tall. That's probably the big thing. We had a caller earlier who said his grass was laying over, and it certainly can do that, and we don't like that. You know, and obviously when it gets taller, it gets bigger issues, and we might even have some snow mold problems as we get into winter, those kind of things. So it's not good to let it go really tall. And when the grass is growing well, and usually September, October, the grass is growing well because we're getting into good temperatures, good moisture, that kind of thing, you could easily mow it down to 2 inches. I wouldn't mow it any shorter than that. Two and a half inches is just fine, but you don't need to like grow it really tall going into winter, and you're better off if you don't.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, very good. Back to Champagne, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I've heard that there is a fall treatment that you could put on trees and shrubs to prevent Japanese beetles for next season. Do you know what that is and how you apply it and when you apply it?
Well, you're probably talking about the product that's been out for a few years now, and it's imidacloprid is actually the chemical that's in a lot of them. And it can be applied now. A lot of times we recommend just to wait until March or April, because the big thing, you really want the plant to take it up. You want to make sure that when the tree is actively growing, so it doesn't work well in June, July, or whatever, when we start seeing Japanese beetles. So the biggest thing is you certainly could apply it now. You could also apply it in, we often just recommend just doing it in March, February, March, when the plant is first starting to take it up. And it depends on the size of the plant, how much you use, and it is something they actually, you normally would put it in a watering can and then water it in.
Okay.
And then you do so much depending on the size of the plant, and you use more according to how big the plant is.
Can you spell the name of the chemical?
Imidacloprid.
Yeah.
Imidacloprid.
Okay. Okay, the cloprid part I could get.
Yeah, imidacloprid.
It starts with an I.
It's I-M-I-D.
I-M-I-D.
A.
Okay.
C-L.
And then cloprid.
Yeah.
Okay, I can
C-L-O-P-R-I-D.
All right.
Cloprid. But it's in a number of products that are out there. But, you know, the problem is if you add it now, realizing it probably had, and I don't know how many months they usually say on those things, is that, you know, there is the thought that you might lose late season control if you'd plant it now.
Oh, okay. So better off being off the hook in the fall and waiting till March.
Yeah, because, you know, over the fall and winter, we're not really worried about those kind of things and
right.
Really want to make sure that it's there. You just don't want to wait too late in the summer season because then it will not
work
well.
Okay, yeah. Great. Yeah. Thanks for the advice.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. Well, the lines are free if we have somebody who would like to pick up the telephone, give us a call and talk with Sandy, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Is there an event that you would like to mention?
There sure is. I'm so glad you asked, David. Coming up this Sunday, the Idea Garden, the Champaign County Master Gardener Idea Garden, it's located on South Lincoln, just south of the corner of Florida and Lincoln and Urbana, is celebrating its 10th anniversary. Can you believe it? It's 10 years.
Really?
I know, hard to believe, isn't it? So the 10th anniversary celebration, it's Sunday, September 16th. It's from 2 to 4. We're going to have food, music. It's a great time to sort of go out. If you haven't had a chance to go out to the Idea Garden, we're going to have tours. You can see what's going on. And also, and I know you're going to be thrilled about this, and you want to get involved. I know you will, David. This is also the 50th anniversary of the pink plastic flamingo. I didn't know if you knew that or not. Did you know that?
I think we might have discussed this.
I think we did.
I have a vague memory about that. Yeah.
And at any rate, in honor of the 50th anniversary of the pink plastic flamingo, we're having a flamingo decorating contest.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, we actually have the flamingos. You come to our office and we'll check them out. And then you bring them back on Sunday, decorated. We have different categories. So it's just going to be a fun activity, just to even go out there and to see how all the different ways people can decorate flamingos. I know you won't want to miss that. So that's this Sunday.
Unfortunately, we'll be out of the country.
Oh, man.
I'm just not going to be available to take part in it.
In any rate. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're having actually kind of a little awards or a ceremony at 3 o'clock on Sunday. And it's just, it's fun. Just go out. It's because it's a beautiful day.
You probably even have a celebrity judging panel.
You betcha.
That I unfortunately also can't be a part of.
I know you're not going to want to miss this. We have over 70 flamingos that are going to be decorated out there. So that's going to be quite a sight.
It'll be something. Take pictures.
Yes, at Idea Garden Sunday. It's just south of the corner of Florida and Lincoln. It's free. Come out. Take a look. See what's going on.
Okay.
Beautiful day.
All right. About 20 minutes left here with Sandy and some other folks with questions. So give us a call. 333-9455. Toll free. 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Champaign. Line one. Hello.
Hi. Well, I've got a question about some bushes.
Mm-hmm.
We had some landscaping done about 2 years ago. Our house faces north, and there were some really old, unkempt yew bushes that had been in there for like 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it had rocks as mulch. And we had the rocks taken out. We had the yew bushes taken out. And the landscaper put in holly bushes. I think they're Blue Princess and
mm-hmm.
Blue Prince.
Mm-hmm.
Now the thing is, not only is it the north side of the house, but about 10 feet away, is this huge birch tree. And so this isn't just north, it's dense shade.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after a year, although the bushes looked healthy, you know, after one winter, they started dying off, and so the landscaper replaced them. And lo and behold, the same thing starts happening. You know, the leaves started getting yellow. Some of them just got brown and dry.
Mm-hmm.
Someone suggested, well, you know, put in some iron. They need iron, which I did. And then someone said, put in Epsom salt. That'll help the yellowing, which I did. But they're not looking happy. And
mm-hmm.
I'm beginning to think maybe it's too shady or there's something else wrong, but can you give me any advice?
Well, hollies are like a lot of azaleas and rhododendrons and stuff. They really need an acidic soil. Because they will suffer from iron deficiency, especially if the pH of the soil is too high.
Uh-huh.
So they prefer acidic soils. So they need something like ammonium sulfate or something that's going to make sure that the pH is low enough that the iron's available to them. So otherwise they can turn yellow. And often you'll see even the yellowing, the veins might even stay green, even though the rest of the leaf is yellow. So that would be number one,
yeah.
I would think about. The other thing is they need moist soil, but they hate poor drainage. So they like it to be moist. They don't like to dry out too much, but they hate being overly wet.
Oh.
So I don't know what kind of soil you have there, but it needs to drain well, but it needs to hang on to some moisture.
And what
well.
If it gets too dry?
If it gets too dry, then they're going to turn yellow and the leaves will probably fall off.
Now, some of them, you know, they don't, where it's died off, they haven't turned yellow at all. It's just, you know, one day it seems like they look perfectly fine and then a few days later it's just brown and dead.
Yeah.
It hasn't gone through the yellow phase.
Yeah. So are you able to water or have you watered periodically, especially
well,
during
you know,
this
we,
hot dry?
Well, we put in a soaker hose and,
mm-hmm.
you know, when it's really hot and dry and droughty, we run it, you know, every couple of days for 45 minutes or something like that. And we also, we have a dehumidifier in our basement. We dump
mm-hmm.
the water from that into a bucket, and we've been dumping it, the water from the bucket, on those bushes.
Mm-hmm.
And still, one of them, I see, you know, has just
right.
gone straight from, you know, nice green leaves to brown.
Well, they like a fairly consistent moisture, so I don't know how long you waited until you went ahead and started to water. I would wonder about that time period, you know, that maybe they waited a little bit. They're not quite as forgiving as some shrubs. You know, if they really dry out really badly one time, sometimes that's enough that you kind of see this regular decline.
Well, there was that 1 week we were away.
Well,
it really heavily before we left, overly watered before we left because I knew there wasn't going to be any rain for the next week.
Right, right.
So and that might be it?
Well, it's we're just, you know, trying to be detective here to sort of figure out what it is. But that might be one thing is that they like the consistent moisture. They don't like to get really dry and really wet and really dry and really wet. They're just one of those until they get established. Once they get established, they're not quite so bad. And are they mulched at all? Or
yeah, there's hardwood mulch around them.
Okay, so there's a little mulch around them as well. So I guess those would be the things that I would think of, kind of cultural kinds of things. They don't like a lot of wind.
They don't get wind,
so that's good. Yeah. Okay.
And so it's not, they'll do okay in dense shade.
Yeah, actually, shade is not a huge, now if it was really dense shade, then probably what you'd see is they wouldn't grow much. They usually will still hang out in shade, but they usually just, you know, they might not grow as well, but they will take some shade.
Is there something that would be better for, you know, a north wall dense shade?
North wall dense shade.
Yeah, I mean, part of it barely gets any sun at all, and on the ends, it gets one side gets some east sun for about an hour or two, and the other side gets some west sun for maybe an hour or two.
Are you wanting it to be evergreen, or do you really care?
Well, I think that was the landscaper's idea, but, you know, I don't want boxwoods. I mean, they're sort of boring.
Okay. I was about to suggest boxwood.
You were going to suggest boxwood? Oh, maybe I should.
They seem to be fairly tolerant of it. But they still need a lot of the same things in the sense that they like to be consistently moist and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
So I guess those things, and I'm trying to think of what else you might appreciate in those kind of areas. I don't know if you've had any, do you know Itea's?
Yeah.
Itea. Actually, those do fairly well. They're not evergreen, but they have fairly nice fall color, and they have a nice flower to them as well. They do like an acidic soil, so we're kind of back to that kind of thing.
Thought they needed some sun.
They need, but they'll, amazingly enough, they're actually native to forested areas.
Oh.
Yeah, they just need moisture. That's probably the big thing.
Oh, okay.
So that would be the other thing that I would think about. So I don't know. Does that kind of help a little bit? Really wonder just a little bit on just how often you're watering them, and just to make sure. You might even dig down there and just to make sure that, you know, that
they're getting the water.
Yeah, and not too wet. Now, do you have clay soils or anything, or do anything that?
I don't think it's clay soil, but, you know, like I said, that there have been yew bushes there for like 50 years, and they had not been tended well, and there were rocks on, you know, for mulch.
Right.
So, you know, we threw in lots of, you know, fertilizer.
And I wouldn't have think, because yews hate to be overly wet. So if it was a really wet area, then those wouldn't have lived.
Except that it's north and it's very shady.
Right.
That's, you know, I could see that it could stay damp for a while. Certainly in the winter when there's snow, because snow banks up against the house.
Right.
It's the last place to melt.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's facing north and it's shady.
Well,
yeah.
So I would really think about those things a little bit just to see if maybe some of that might be some ideas for you.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah,
all right,
good
thanks
luck.
For the call. Let's go on here. We got a couple cell phones. One here, line number two. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I have a question about lawn care, and it actually goes back to one of the earlier calls you had. I do not want to water my lawn. But I'd like to make it a little more drought tolerant and would like to overseed with something that I could achieve that goal. I think in one of the first calls, the discussion was about maybe some fescue-type grasses.
Mm-hmm.
Could you expand on that? And for somebody like myself who would like to have a more drought-tolerant lawn, what is the best strategy for achieving that?
Mm-hmm. And you did say this is full sun? Did you say that? I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I didn't say that. It's mostly full sun. There's some areas that are shaded quite a bit, but most of it's got quite a bit of sun.
Okay. Well, we were just talking about the turf-type tall fescues, and the reason they're calling them turf-type tall fescues is that it is, if you're from any kind of farmland or agricultural background, you remember tall fescues, or you know tall fescues as being the pasture grass, and it's not terribly, you know, what most people would consider aesthetically pleasing. It tends to be a very wide blade, very coarse blade, and actually sometimes it's kind of a weedy grass within our Kentucky bluegrass, and it looks like this big clumpy thing that people call water grass. Well, that's the old types of tall fescue, and so they've been breeding them for a number of years now, looking for ones that are more aesthetically pleasing and just make a better turf. And that's why they've come up with these. And there's lots of cultivars now of these what are called turf-type tall fescue. So pretty much any kind of garden center that's dealing with any kind of grass seed probably has some selections of this. Now, normally we wouldn't mix tall fescue with with Kentucky bluegrass because it looks so different. So generally, most people, when they go with turf-type tall fescues, they're truly looking for, that little different, that low maintenance. They do much better in low maintenance, as in they don't need nearly as much fertilization. They will do much better in drought situations. I have part of my lawn in turf-type tall fescue, and I guarantee it looks green when the rest of the lawn doesn't look green.
But it doesn't mix well with others.
Yeah, it wouldn't be one that you would probably mix, because Kentucky bluegrass has that finer leaf blade, has that kind of blue-green look, so it looks different. So we typically probably wouldn't mix those together. So, it might be one of those areas where you might want to try it and see if you like the way it looks, but just to realize they have a little different look to them.
Kentucky bluegrass varieties that have been bred to be more drought tolerant?
Wow. I think a lot of the newer ones, I don't know that I know of any. You might go, I don't know if you have web access, but you might go to the U of I website on and then look for the turf section in the Natural Resources Environmental Sciences Department. There's a turf section, and actually have a lot of great information. And so that might be a good place to start, or check with your local extension office on some of those, because I don't know of any right offhand that I could give you names of that would do well with that. But it'd be one of those things that you might decide that a certain part of your lawn, you want to go with this tall fescue. I've had really good success with it. I will notice that in the springtime when the grass is growing really well, I actually have to mow that more often than the Kentucky bluegrass. So I will tell you that. There's the other side of that it grows faster in cooler, moister weather. But it definitely looks better in July and August.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Another cell phone call here. Line number 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to tell you that I've been using the gloves. They're called they're made by Bionic, and they're actually sports gloves, but they have holes in them for aeration, and they're a very fine, soft deer skin that can be washed. So after I'm working outside, I come in and actually wash my hands with my gloves on and lay them out.
Oh, so it's a sports glove, athletic glove,
and they're made by Bionic.
Bionic. Oh, I love the name.
And 5 years, I've finally worn holes in a couple of the fingers.
Oh, wow, that's good. Okay, great. Hey, thanks.
A little more expensive, but they're very worth it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, great. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you. Over to Indiana, Duggar, Indiana here, line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. I have a couple simple questions. I probably should already know the answers to, but I'm hearing some conflicting reports. The first one is about rosemary. I planted a rosemary bush this spring, and it's doing nicely, about 3 feet tall. My sister tells me I need to overwinter it indoors.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Absolutely correct.
Always listen to your sister.
Right, my older sister.
You definitely need to be listening to her. No, there are some newer varieties that supposedly you can winter over, but I can almost guarantee you they're not going to make it. They're just, even those, we've had really a lot of conflicting reports.
Exactly.
So unfortunately, they're just, rosemary is really one of those you really need to bring in. It'll take some pretty cold temperatures, so you can certainly, if you had maybe an unheated porch or something like that that doesn't get too much below zero, you'd probably do pretty well with it. But
should I cut it back any?
I would just bring it in as is. I don't know. Do you have it in a pot now, or is it in?
It's in the ground. Right?
It's in the ground. I generally, what I do is, like this time of year, I go ahead and dig them up. Get them in a pot, but then I leave it outside.
Right.
And then it goes through, and I let it go through some cold temperatures, as in I go ahead and let it freeze, and so it knows it's time to slow down.
Right.
And then sort of let it start to go into that natural dormancy that they kind of do, but then I don't let it get much below freezing, really, for the most part.
Okay.
And then I bring it inside, but then keep it in a cool spot, hopefully a cool spot, and then make sure it doesn't dry out too much.
All right, that's kind of what I thought.
Yeah,
maybe I could.
Sisters are always
well.
Right. Well, you can try it.
Cut it back in mud. No, I don't want.
You
it
can
to
try
die.
It. Yeah, but I can almost bet you it's not going to make it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Also, I'd like to know. I planted one of the new giant black elephant ears this year.
Oh yeah, fun, huh?
Really gorgeous.
Yeah,
that's
great.
Dramatic plant, and even the dying leaves are pretty. They turn brilliant red, or dark red.
Wow.
I should say, not brilliant red, but.
Yeah. Sure.
But anyway, my question there, obviously, I'm going to have to bring that in.
Right.
Should I cut it all the way back?
I would, I think with those, those you definitely do not want them to freeze
right.
at all. So you definitely
right.
want to dig them up before they completely freeze. But generally what I do is I've just dug them up and then I just naturally just let the foliage just dry down itself and then I just remove it as is.
You keep it cool in a basement or
yep.
something.
Yep.
Water it occasionally through the winter.
Yeah, you just don't want it, depending on which one it is. Some of them form more of a root and some of them form more of a bulb, kind of depending on which one you have. But you just, you know, I'd put it in a, if you have peat moss or something like that, and then just check it periodically. But
okay.
they usually went over pretty well.
Well, thanks so much.
Sure.
Also, one more question.
Uh-huh.
This is one that's been kicked back and forth in my family for years. I would like a definitive answer if
Uh-oh.
There is one. Irises, when's the best time to divide? Right after they bloom or wait till fall?
Okay, what's your bet?
My bet's right after they bloom.
Very good. Ding, 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 ding.
That's what
so
grandma,
you're right.
Grandma told me that.
See, grandmas know.
Yeah.
Grandmas know these things. Older sisters and grandmas know these things.
That's
now,
right.
Generally, you're better off if you can do it. Really, the hot part of the year, July and August. But
that's
the only...
what I always thought.
Yep.
And other family
yep.
members
you're better
are
off.
Insisting. We have these heirloom ones that have been in the family for three generations, and I'm the last one to have any.
Wow, what pressure.
And everybody wants some, and they're telling me wait till
what
fall.
Pressure. Nope, nope. You really want it. The problem is with those bearded irises, they have a tendency to rot. Those rhizomes rot. And so doing it when it's going to, we know it's going to be cool, and we know it's going to be wet, is not the time to be doing it because then you have more concern about the rhizome rotting. So you're right. Grandma was right.
Well, they're going to have to wait till next year.
There you go.
Well,
all right.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Yeah, one more caller here. Orland Park, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Enjoy the program. Thank
Good.
You very much.
Sure.
All right, I got a two-part question. I've got an established lawn and established weeds, and I also need to reseed.
Mm.
So do I fertilize first to try to build up the lawn, or do I I reseed first? I know, like, when you have some of these where it's got weed killer, it then hinders the germination of the grass
right.
seeds.
So. Right. Right.
What's my best bet on this?
You kind of have to decide which is worse and which is better. As in, if you have decent grass, like every, maybe 3 or 4 inches, there's like some decent grass. You know, you've got some decent grass, but then there's weeds in there. That might be enough where you could go ahead and do like a weed and feed, get the existing grass going, kill off the existing weeds, and that might be enough that you could really get a pretty good situation going where you can encourage that existing grass to really get up and get going. If you have really huge areas where it is truly nothing but weeds, you might be really just better off trying to kill that stuff off. We're getting kind of at a tough period here, but depending on what the weeds are, if they're annual weeds, I might just go ahead and reseed right into it, the good grass right into it. If they're perennial weeds, I might want to think about, okay, I'm really going to see if I can get rid of these existing weeds now. So you kind of have to decide on how much good grass do I have in there. If it's pretty good, got it every few inches, then you can probably often get away with just going ahead and reseeding right into it.
Yeah, we got to go.
Yeah.
Sandy Mason, she'll be back here again next month. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension, Champaign County. Thanks.
Sure.